This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
BTBN Play.
Hey everybody, welcome back to PTBN Play on the PTBN Pop Feed. This is Brad, and I am with Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I am doing well. We are continuing our top four, GameStruck 4, our defining games, chronological look through video game consoles and what we've experienced. And yes, we are today going to be talking about, we're keeping it in 16-bit. And no, it's not the TurboGrafx-16, although maybe we'll talk for a couple minutes at the end on that one. We didn't want to think anybody, you know, we talked on the Genesis show a little bit about the Super Nintendo, which is what we're going to talk about today. We didn't want to leave anybody else out that was an NEC fan that had either a PC Engine in Japan or a TurboGrafx here. But we're going to talk about a big one today, and that's going to be the Super Nintendo. So Jordan, I'm going to start with you. Give us a little bit of background that you have on the system, and then I'll talk a little bit about mine, and we'll move into our top four.
Sure. So as we talked about in our last episode with Genesis, I was more of a Genesis guy growing up. We had Genesis first. I don't know that that's the only reason why. I think my age, the Genesis games appealed to me more. We talked about how Sonic and NBA Jam and even like Earthworm Jim, which was available on both systems, but still just had that loud, lots of noise, lots of colors, lots of things happening type vibe. And then you switch it to Mario, which is a quality game series, of course, obviously stood the test of time. It's a little bit more, I guess subtle is a weird term to use for a game about a guy who kills turtles and, you know, fights dragons or whatever. But, well, is Bowser a dragon? What is Bowser? I wouldn't say dragon.
I mean, he's got a turtle shell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a Koopa.
Yeah, that's a podcast for another day, I
there
guess.
There it is. We're going to unpack that.
Yeah.
We should ask Steve and Glenn that, right, for their questions. I would like to see Glenn debunk what Bowser and his family is.
I would guess they'd settle on some sort of hybrid, but...
Sure.
Anyways, so yeah, we did have Super Nintendo and Genesis in the house at the same time. I couldn't tell you exactly when we got the Super Nintendo, but I know for a fact that I had it growing up because I remember a lot of games that we will talk about growing up, some that we won't get to talk about, maybe briefly mention in honorable mentions. But for me, since Genesis came first, that was the one that kind of stuck with me as a child. But what I've found is as I've aged, I almost said grown up, but I really haven't grown up. But as I've aged and gone back and played games, I prefer the Super Nintendo now. And I don't know if that's nostalgia kicking in. I don't know if it's because of the Super NES console that you can buy or things like that. But just as an adult, I tend to go back and play Super Nintendo games more than I would Genesis games. And actually, as I'm discussing this out loud, I think I know the answer. And I think it might be because my affinity for role-playing games has developed.
Sure. More. And I think, too, the 2D aesthetic is one that, you know, as we moved into PlayStation and Saturn, you know, we got into 3D. Everything was 3D. Yeah. But SNES did 2D so well. And we'll talk about some of their 3D endeavors and some of the tricks they used tonight. Sure. They did 2D so well, and those games played so well. The gameplay was so tight that they're timeless. And that's why I think, you know, with the SNES Classic and whatnot, it was, you know, it's a huge success because these games, anybody can pick them up now and they're tremendous games. And that aesthetic, you know, or that 2D platformers and stuff and that look is emulated so much in today's, like, you know, indie games, you know, and even main console games where they, you know, they want to capture that again and it's still good and with that gameplay. So I would definitely agree with you. You know, the, you know, there's certainly some examples from the Genesis side that that are re-released, and there's an upcoming Genesis collection again as they, you know, milk every dollar they can out of their library, as they should. But with the SNES, you know, I think the games and the role-playing ones we'll talk about too are so good and timeless, and that's just something that, you know, that really puts the system on another level.
Yeah, I do think there's a small bit to, you know, history is written by the winners too, you know, and Nintendo lasted while Sega is still a company, but they aren't producing systems anymore. And so, you know, when they ceased making systems and consoles, maybe that just kind of led people to kind of cling to Nintendo more than they did in the past. So.
Well, you know, and that battle was, and I did not have a Super Nintendo. My sister did, and she got one more in like the mid-90s towards the tail end of the system and kind of played it through into, you know, the end of the decade, even when the Nintendo 64 was, you know, we had one of those too, but, you know, that was kind of her system. And, you know, I had friends that had it too, but this was the console wars, right? So there was no battle between, you know, Master System and Nintendo. But Genesis, though, and Super Nintendo was a big thing. And, you know, there's been books written about it. I recommend you know, listeners checking those out. You know, the Console Wars, I think, was one of them written by people that, you know, worked within Sega. And so to kind of set the timetable for it, so the Genesis came out in 1989 in the U.S., which seems early when you think about
it. Very early, yeah.
Because Sonic came out in the summer of 1991. And that's important as like a tipping point because the Super Nintendo was released late in the summer of 1991. So that's really where like the battle began because here comes – that's really where it needs to start. So they did have a two-year lead time. But again, you and I are the same age. I didn't see anything with Genesis really pre-Sonic, very limited. And the Nintendo, you know, had Mario 3 in 89-90. I think I may be getting that wrong. And so they were still chugging strong, though. Right? Because, you know, they – really were, you know, the mass rollout to the U.S. was in 86. So really, the NES was only 4 or 5 years old, and you know how popularity, you know, that curve comes up till it becomes mainstream. So really, the Genesis came out here when Nintendo was, like, at its peak. And so we really don't think about, like, Sega in 1989 and 1990 pre-Sonic. It really is kind of that jumping off point for them. But that was a big deal. And again, you know, you're fortunate to have both in your house, and a lot of times people didn't. And I know that I preferred the Genesis 2 because of the sports games. So, you know, graphically, the Super Nintendo was very good. And, like, paused, like, if you had the game paused, like, wow, you could maybe say, like, oh, these graphics look better than what the Genesis could do. But from a frames per second standpoint, they just processing-wise with sports games, they always seemed like a little bit – they were better on the Genesis in my mind. And look, I think that there's going to be staunch defenders because sometimes that's all you know. Like, if all you knew was NHL 94 on the Super Nintendo, you'd say, yeah, it held up fine. But then you play them both, and you're like, this is skipping frames and jumping around a little bit. And I remember trying to play NBA Live 95 on the Super Nintendo and going like, wow, this is not what I remember. Like, this is – after playing it on PC and even Genesis, I'm like, this is not good. Like, what is going on here with this? So I think sports games for me was Genesis 2. And so I did not actually have a Super Nintendo. And then I, except for my sisters and some friends. So I'll talk about those tonight for sure.
Sure.
So why don't we get started there with that? Why don't we start with you? We'll go with your number 4 and then we'll take it from there.
Let me list one honorable mention because you mentioned it. Okay. And it's funny because originally I thought this might be my number 4, but when I sat down, I'm like, nah, it really isn't my 4th game. But NBA Live 95 was a game for Super Nintendo that I really came close to putting on. And it's exactly why you said I just didn't have it for Genesis, so all I had was the Super Nintendo, so that's what I loved it for.
Yeah.
It was a really good basketball game. You know, had like the team meter with shooting free throws, which I think was the first time that ever happened. Just a very good game.
It had that isometric view, right? Yep. You know, the iconic isometric view. And actually, that was the system that I first saw that game on, too. And I think the SNES, the colors popped a bit more than Genesis 2. So it looked great. And, there are no sports games on my list. So I'll say that spoiler out here.
Yeah.
But that game was – I had first seen that game on the Super NES, but I actually played most of it on DOS on a personal computer.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to save that for a very special episode that's going to be so that's going to be for later. I did see – that's the first time I ever laid eyes on the NBA Live 95. Like, that move from 94-95 is one of the most iconic game changers in sports gaming history was that new engine that they put in. And I loved NBA and basketball games the most at that point, so it certainly was all in on it. And so it was really groundbreaking. And it's funny, yeah, I saw the SNES for that also. So.
And I almost wonder, as we're discussing it, and I remember thinking, like, okay, I had it for SNES. I wonder why. It's probably just simply a case of, I mean, I was a kid, and I asked my parents for it. And if they go to the store, they're probably just going to get whichever one is handed to them. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, mom just knows to get the basketball game. She doesn't know to get it for Genesis or Super Nintendo. Luckily, we had both, but that could probably be a problem that actually happened with kids growing up, was they would get a Super Nintendo game and all they had was Genesis, you know? So yeah. I'm sure parents made those mistakes.
There's a popular meme going around now. It was like, you know, I think the gist of it is, like, in 1988, I couldn't understand how my – like, my mom or dad, like, didn't know, like, all the intricacies of all the things that, you know, we knew about gaming. Like, like, I used to tell my dad, like, my play-by-plays of, like, my Madden 94 games. And I think about, like, and now it's, like, we try to – now you're better at this than others. And now we try to, like, put together the pieces, you know, if you're a young kid or whatever, and you're just as lost because of everything going on with life. So it's funny how it's changed.
I think the biggest difference is you can't pause games anymore. Because so much of it's played online, and you're playing it live with other people. So, you know, that was a thing that really saved us back in the day. We could pause a game. If we had to leave for a half an hour, I'd just leave games paused. I know you're told not to do that because it frees under the screen, but, you know, that was an old wives' tale in my mind. So.
Yeah, boy, the old wives' tales were like that the brick would, you know, burn the carpet or, you know, burn into the screen. And actually, I think that happened more with, like, flat screens and stuff later. I don't remember any tubes burning into anything, but we were scared straight. And we didn't want to waste power probably either. So
right. Anyway, let's get over our list. Sorry to sidetrack us there, but my number four is a sequel to a Nintendo game that was actually on your list, and I went with this might be my first hot take of our series. I went with what I considered to be the better version of Punch-Out. I went with Super Punch-Out.
Nice.
I love Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I think it's a great game, and it's definitely the more classic, more remembered game. But for my money, I would rather play Super Punch-Out. For a few reasons. Number one, it's not impossible, which I think does help. I mean, I love a good challenge, but we talked about this on the Nintendo episode. There's a difference between challenging and frustratingly impossible, and that's what Mike Tyson's Punch-Out was. Whereas with Super Punch-Out, it's basically the same mechanics. You're still Little Mac, and you're still fighting these cartoonish, colorful characters. In fact, I think Ball Bull, Super Macho Man are both still in the game. But you've got all these new characters, and I think they did the cartoony versions better. Have you ever played Super Punch-Out?
Yeah, so a little bit. And the Wii remake, it was not a remake, the Wii Punch-Out game was actually modeled off of that, because pre-Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, that style that Super Punch-Out is was an arcade game that Nintendo made. So they kind of brought that back in. So I did not play it at the time. I actually own it now, and I've only glance a little bit on it, but I don't think it's a wrong take to say, like, gameplay wise and creativity wise, like, this version was exceptional.
Yeah, and it's very close either way. You know, I mean, right down to, like, Mike Tyson's has Glass Joe, Super Punch Out has Gabby J. It's basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. The guy who's 1-99 is just like, here's the first fighter. If you lose to him, throw your video game away and never play a video game again. You know, this isn't for you. I just like the characters better. We had, like, a clown that would throw, like, juggling balls. There was a dual boss, the Bruiser Brothers. They were kind of like the Tyson of the game, and they were very difficult, but you could beat them. If I remember correctly, their little tell before they threw a punch was their earring would glimmer.
Sure.
And so that's when you knew a punch was coming. And it's the same mechanics, essentially, you know, getting the timing down, following the patterns, and doing it right. But there's more fighters. I think the fighters are more creative. There's, like, a Bruce Lee type. There's all kinds of different fighters. And one other thing that I like about it that kind of added a competitive element to it to play with other people is, obviously, it's a one-player game only, but you had time scores. So let's say you beat Bear Hugger, it would list your time if you did it in 30 seconds. You know, okay. You were third overall. So then your friend could try and beat him in 29 seconds. And we had a lot of fun doing that as kids, you know, trying to beat each other's time scores and who could knock out Gabby J the quickest and, you know, Masked Muscle, you know, who was a luchador. So,
sure.
Again, we're always going back to wrestling with these podcasts. Mm-hmm. But just a great game. And I had to list it. It's also available on the SNES Classic. If you have that, you can play it. Just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yep. Good one. Definitely a worthy sequel, something they took to the next level in 16-bit. And that's definitely one that holds up, too. And like I said, the Wii Punch-Out game is similar in the sense that's kind of the one that they kind of built off of, too. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that it's a spiritual successor for sure.
It was just missing something, though, the Wii version.
Yeah.
I don't really know what. It just I had it and just didn't feel the same.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Probably because you had to stand on a balancing board if you wanted, or waggle your controller around to. Well, my number four is kind of going to piggyback off a conversation we had in the Genesis show, and so my number four is Street Fighter II, and So, Street Fighter 2, obviously a huge hit in the arcades. I had a lot of experience playing in the arcades. And, you know, if I could pull off like a fireball, it was a good day because it was not the most coordinated when it came to fighting games. Not particularly good at them. But the home console version came to the Super Nintendo first. It had a good, like, year plus on exclusive rights. So Capcom brought Street Fighter 2 and then Street Fighter 2 Turbo and then... Street Fighter 2 Turbo Hyper Fighting Edition, which is actually made the SNES Classic. So, you know, if you think sequels today are bad, just think about how expensive Super Nintendo games were and how they kept bringing out, you know, slightly
essentially the same game.
The same game, just they figured out how to make it faster. And so, you know, they made tweaks in the arcade and they made them at home and people kept buying it. It was huge. And so, since you could only get it on Super Nintendo and they already had the six buttons, it was really, really cool. You know, and it played well, too. I mean, look, they crammed it into a 16-meg chip, which was huge at the time. There were things, obviously, they had to take out from the arcade, but it was a great fighter. And I had more experience with that one at the time than Mortal Kombat, which is something I played more years later on the Sega side. So, yeah, Street Fighter 2 was my number four.
Cool. So here's something fun that I brought up for this episode. Maybe we should have done it for past episodes. I have in front of me a list of the top-selling Super Nintendo games of all time. And Street Fighter II came in at number five, the fifth best-selling game of all time. And that's Street Fighter II, The World Warrior, which was the first release.
The first one, yeah.
And what's crazy is Hyper Fighting is number nine. So two Street Fighter II games in the top 10 selling games of all time for the SNES, I think speaks to how big of a deal Street Fighter was, and fighting games in particular at that time.
Yep, a big thing in the 90s. That could be our most 90s moment, right, of that was just the fighting games in there. And, you know, we'll maybe talk about some of the different clones and things that you saw from there. But, yeah, Street Fighter 2 was tremendous. And man,
some good, some bad.
Yeah, a lot bad. But,
But yeah, I mean, I love Street Fighter 2. That was a game I remember discovering in the arcade. And I always wanted to play Street Fighter 1 because, like, you know, I found Street Fighter 2 in the arcade. I'm like, what's Street Fighter 1 like? And I don't know that it was a game.
Like, it was a game. It was on it was called Fighting Street. Oh man, I can't believe my brain has really gone down. So it was it was a game. It was on the TurboGrafx, a 16, and Capcom and only put it out there. It was not it was a fighting game, but obviously nowhere near fleshed out to what we would believe Street Fighter 2 is. That was always kind of the mystery, because it wasn't called Street Fighter. It was called something else.
Sure.
You can find it actually on, you know, those Capcom classic collections they put out on the PS2 and the PSP and stuff. Mm-hmm. You can find the original Street Fighter on those.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I've never played it. So
yeah, it's not good. It was certainly a, I agree with you too, though. It seems weird that they would go right to the two, but
yeah. In a way, I think it's similar to when we get there, like Grand Theft Auto 3 was so much bigger than the other two.
Sure.
For a lot of people, 3 was the first one, myself included. So,
sure.
So as we talk about Street Fighter, who was your go-to character? Because I had a couple.
Yeah, so Dalism was probably my biggest one because he could just fill the screen.
The length.
Yep. And so, like, since I wasn't particularly good at it, I could, like, sit back and just throw, like, heavy kicks. But, like, when it came to, like, could I do Zangief's pile driver or stuff like that, like I said, like, you know, I mean, later on I could certainly do, like, most of Ryu's tricks, excuse me, and Ken's different moves and stuff, like dragon punches and all that stuff, but I couldn't really ever pull off any of the big combos.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think it depends on if I was playing one player or playing a friend. If I was playing a friend, I would always go with Dalsim or Blanka, too.
Oh, Blanka, okay.
Because if you're getting attacked, you could just do your electrocution thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You know, played a lot of Chun-Li, too, now that I think back.
Yeah, I was going to say, my go-to if I'm playing the computer was E-Honda.
Okay.
You know, so shout out to Chad Campbell and our Pyro representation here. but E-Honda had, you know, he would kind of do, Chun-Li would do the rapid kicks. E-Honda had the hand thing.
Slap, yeah. The palm strike.
Yeah, it reached a little farther. Yeah, it reached a little farther. And he had the torpedo move, if you remember that. So he was probably my favorite one. But like you said, Zangief, you know, if you could hit those moves, it felt like they were more deadly than anyone else's in the game, even though they probably weren't.
Right.
You know, like the pile driver, the power bomb and stuff. So, but yeah, great game. And I'm glad you listed it so we could talk about it. But so we're starting off with some fighting.
Yeah, right, starting off with some fighting. So, and one quick note is too, and we talked about this with Mortal Kombat, was, you know, as the roster obviously expanded a bit, you know, with Hyper Fighting. They added a couple more, and actually Street Fighter 3 didn't come out till the Dreamcast. They went in obviously different directions at Alpha, which is obviously that's a great game, and we'll probably talk about that in the next generation. And then they started to expand the roster. But there is something quaint still to the original very limited roster where, like, yep, you only know these 10 guys, you know, and you know you're going to Brazil to fight Blanka.
Brazil!
And I don't think I ever said Dalism. I'm trying to think of how you pronounce it. I don't think I've ever said that word out loud before, so that was a new thing for me. Like, when I said that, I was like, I don't think I've never spoken that word before.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, going to wrestling, I remember for years and years I would read the name Chris Benoit in magazines, and until I saw him on television, I thought his name was Chris Benoit.
There you go.
You know?
Well, and so, I had a big one where I was a huge U2 fan, and I honestly thought his name was Bono, and I was so tied into him. When I found out it was Bono, I actually felt disconnected, and it was a different, like, person, just because you've thought about this and listened to this and all the time, and you really make a connection to that. I made such a strong connection that when it changed, I was like, it was a little bit less for me. Weird.
I felt deceived
in my own self. And then it was like, I don't really know that guy. I know Bono. I don't know Bono.
Yeah, I don't like that new singer that they got.
We're weird. Kids are weird. All right, you're number three.
My number three is one of the most well-known games of the system. I went with Donkey Kong Country.
Yes, that is my number three also, so we're going to talk about them together.
Cool. This might be the first time we've matched on an entry in
yet. I think so. It's hard because it's quite a big library, but this is on my list, yes.
Just an awesome game, and the graphics were very innovative at the time, which is funny. If you were to look at them now, they might look a little antiquated, but this was a Rare game, and Rare always kind of had a little bit of difference to the look and feel of games. But Donkey Kong Country, for anyone who has not played, is Donkey Kong, but not Donkey Kong like you would see in the arcade. This is Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong exploring the lands, trying to find the banana horde, fighting people along the way. Just an awesome side-scrolling game. Good music. A lot of little side quests where you could find the three golden animals and do those bonus levels. But what I liked about it the most was the one- and two-player elements where you could switch back and forth between Donkey and Diddy, and you could even do like a two-player type thing. Just an awesome, awesome game that, like, I have gone back and replayed with my kids. My wife would play this one. This is one of those games that Nintendo was so good at that anyone can sit down and play. Not everybody can be really good at it, but everyone can figure it out.
Yeah.
And Donkey Kong Country is a game just like that.
Yeah, so this had the, I'm going to use the word iconic again, it was these pre-rendered 3D graphics that Rare did, and they, you know, in doing a little light research, and look, you can find great retro video game shows like Retronauts and stuff to hear like really detailed talk about this. So I'm going to skim a little high level, but essentially, yeah, so Rare really pushed the envelope and they came up with a way where they could compress graphics and make them look 3D and be really tight. And so when you watch this on this, and this is 32 megabytes. So it's double Street Fighter 2. And when you watch the game, you were like, what is this? Like, it looked like it was 3D. Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's a good trick. And there are a lot of tricks on the Super Nintendo. We'll talk a little bit about Mode 7 later on, you know, which you could see, which made it look like 3D. But this was just a platformer that looked like it was 3D with unbelievable graphics. And this was a huge seller, too. You talked about that list there. I mean, I think, is it third all time?
Yep. Yeah. Number three.
So, and this came out on Christmas 94. And just a huge, huge success. And not that we just like things because they're successful. You know, we want to have some type of artistic quality into it. And it's funny because I remember, you know, playing it, and I liked collecting the bananas too. A little bit of a collectathon. Not as bad as the Nintendo 64 version or reimagining of the game. But I remember it being a good platformer. And we talked a little bit with Earthworm Jim, how like it was a little bit wonky and challenging, and I remember this being a little bit similar to that, where it wasn't crystal clear. You're riding a rhinoceros and trying to jump around. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
And so I was doing research for another game, and I came across a quote from a Shigeru Miyamoto, who, you know, famous for Zelda's and Mario's and Nintendo's best designer ever, where he didn't really like Donkey Kong Country's graphics. He wanted to go in a different direction. And I pulled a quote up, and he said something along the lines of, Donkey Kong Country proves that players will put up with mediocre gameplay in as long as the graphics are okay. So that's a pretty stiff shot back in the mid-90s. But because there is a little bit of a, you know, and you listen to different shows and other gamers, that there's a little bit of prevalent thought that actually Donkey Kong Country is actually not good from like a gaming standpoint. We remember it being great if you played it since then. I have not played it much, so I'm not speaking to it as being my opinion, but there is a little bit of a discourse, which kind of reminds me of wrestling Twitter, where it's like, well, actually this guy is actually not good. And the thought was that this game is actually not a great game. Because of the gameplay hindrances, and as a platformer, it's not as good as what it was made out or sold to be. So, but they did come out with sequels. They came out with Diddy Kong's Quest and Dixie, you know, in year after year, which is a good way to make money. And then they took some time off, and then we played through the Wii game, Donkey Kong Country.
Talk about a hard
game. That's a hard game, man. That is one of the hardest games I've played. And we got pretty far, and then they came out with a... Actually, Tropical Freeze was out for the Wii U, and that actually was just released on the Switch too, so you can revisit that. And those are better versions. I think they're better than their Super Nintendo counterparts from a gameplay standpoint.
I would say I have gone back and played it, and I get some of the criticisms, but I wouldn't outright say that it's a bad game.
No, I agree.
Because there is still some fun elements to it, but some of the stuff that's frustrating is frustrating not because of a challenge, but because of poorly made things. Like, you go to jump on a ledge and you clearly land on the ledge, yet you fall down the pit and die. Right. You know, that's stuff that is kind of inexcusable. But at the time, you know, it probably had to do with the graphics and what they were doing. Sure. So, nostalgia covers a lot of wrongs.
This is a good example of one, but that's a great choice. So let's fast forward then to your number two.
Yeah, my number two, speaking of nostalgia, is one that my nostalgia wanted me to put it at number one, but cooler heads prevailed. I left it at two. If I'm being honest, though, I would like to do a 1 and 1A because...
We can do that. We make the rules here. We're the boss.
Yeah, exactly. So my 1A is my favorite Super Nintendo game as a kid. Still love it. Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
That is also my number one, so I will spoil that.
Okay.
That is number one on my list, so we'll call it 1A. We'll go a little bit out of order. It's more of the top four defining, loose 1 through 4 for me, so we can talk about that now. That is my number one. I'll start real quick, and then you can wax tremendously on it. So this was one that my sister had, and I remember that we had played it together, and I remember beating, like, I know you went back and forth between the light and dark world, but I really remember, like, I thought it was like the original Zelda in the sense of like you finished half the game and then it like gave you like another half a game to play completely.
Yep.
So I remember beating that, and I probably used a fact to do it, you know, and so a walkthrough, as it were. And I remember beating that part of it too. And again, this is a top down, beautiful game, and timeless. And I'll say too is that this is another game. Because we're going to probably talk about one later, or at least in our mentions, where this game came out in 1991. So you're talking like the debut of the system, and this is like a launch title that even today is like the best game on the system. So it didn't take them four years to realize, you know, what a great game was. They were making them right out of the gate in late 91, which is when the war really struck up. Because, I mean, this is a fantastic game. I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things that I love about it is that it righted the wrong of Zelda 2 from the NES, you know, because if you remember, Zelda was my number one on the NES countdown, the original Zelda. Then Zelda 2 was just kind of like, what are you doing here? And they could have continued down the Zelda 2 path, but instead they kind of went back to the original Zelda. And this game, I think, is a perfect example of what Super Nintendo did compared to the original Nintendo. You know, the improvements, the graphic improvements, the bigger games, the more quality stuff. It's just, it's if you love the original Legend of Zelda, I don't see why you wouldn't love this game, because it's basically the original Legend of Zelda, but bigger and brighter and better, with more dungeons and more enemies. And it's really challenging too. You know, I mean, it's a game that I could beat. But some of those dungeons, like the ice dungeon, I remember it's really tricky, because you have to do things in a certain way, and if you do it wrong, you almost have to start over, and there's some real challenge to it. Good story. I'm always a sucker for the Zelda stories as well. But yeah, like everything you said, I mean, this was right out of the gate one of the first SNES games, and I don't rank it highly because, oh, it's the first, so therefore it gets some out. No, I rank it because it's the best.
Yeah.
You know, it just so happens one of the first games was the best. And everything I've said about Zelda, I echo even more so on Link to the Past. And when we get into 64, you're going to hear me gush even some more about Zelda. I'm a Zelda fan through and through. But yeah, like you said, it is almost like two quests, because remembering the game off the top of my head, you had to get like three pieces of something. I can't remember what they were. And it's kind of like, okay, when I do that, I'll fight Ganon. But nope, that just unlocks the Dark World. And that basically, you've got like nine new levels you got to get through. So, I just remember some of the stuff I really like about it is there's some comedic elements too to the game. You know, like Link actually becomes wanted in A Link to the Past. You know, and so all of a sudden you're appearing on wanted posters, which you can yank out of the ground and chuck at people and stuff. You know, just fun stuff like that. People would see him coming and run in fear and call the guards, and just some cool stuff. So yeah, just a great game. Also in the top 10 all-time selling SNES games.
Yes, is it number 5?
It's number 7, actually, behind Street Fighter.
Interesting. Yeah. I know it got a Player's Choice release later on. It's actually the version that we had. And really, it is, I think, I really think it's The Legend of Zelda imagined the best way. And I haven't played the newer game, but in my gaming, like, that's my favorite Zelda game. It's the one I've played the most too. You know, I've always kind of I've had an affinity for the series, and I may have them, but for when it comes to like actually like putting the time in, that's the one that I put the most time in. And they brought it back. They brought back Link to the Past between, what was it called? Let me see here. Trying to think of the 3DS.
You're talking about the 3DS release?
Yeah, the 3DS.
Yeah, like the four shadows or the four seasons or something.
Well, they did. The Four Swords was a Game Boy Advance GameCube game, which actually it may make my list when we get there.
A Link Between Worlds.
Me trying to. Yeah. Yes, A Link Between Worlds was 100% like spiritual successor. A little bit easier. I didn't put a ton of time into it, but I actually like how like not easy, but in the sense of like being open and being able to go where you wanted to go. And it was great that they brought that back for the 3DS, because it's just a, like, we know 3D Zeldas and they're great, and then this is the ultimate 2D top-down Zelda game. Yeah. And this is also on the SNES Classic, of course. Actually, every game we've talked about so far is. So
every game on my list, actually.
Yeah,
is
available. I mean, if you ask me, like, you know, if somebody asked me, like, you know, what can I, you know, get into playing or how can I play them? I don't want the original system. Just get the SNES Classic. You can nitpick on, you know, Super Ghosts and Goblins and who paid to get that in there. But other than that, sure. I mean, this is everything that you'd want. And we'll talk a little bit about some of those other ones in there because they're going to come up with our number one. So.
Yeah. But yeah, I think with Zelda 2, this was Zelda number 2. Right. it was almost like a sandbox game before sandbox gaming really had been developed. You know, like sandbox gaming now where open worlds and you have side quests and all kinds of things like that. Didn't really have side quests yet, but you could go anywhere you wanted. You didn't just have to go to the next battle. You could explore the world and you could look for heart containers and you could look for boomerangs and bow and arrows and all kinds of things. And I think it was kind of like the precursor to these open world environment games that are so popular now that are almost like standard now with most games.
Sure.
So, yeah. Can't say enough about how much I love Zelda, and yet it's not even my number one.
Well, I'm going to do my number two because that's technically my number one, so it'll be great because then we'll segue into your number one. So my number two is actually Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island. So,
oh, wow, okay.
You know, as a callback to the 16-bit countdown we did, and I'm going to reiterate that because it's been a couple years, you know, I actually have a pretty big blind spot for Super Mario World, obviously released with the system, mm-hmm. another timeless game right out of the gate that's tremendous today. But I've beaten Mario 64, you know, the Wii games, the Nintendo games, and I never played Super Mario World until, I mean, maybe like a level or two, like at someone's house, like, or, you know, but that's it.
Sure.
And so, until, like, you know, I think I got it on, like, well, I have it here in my office, too, and I have it on, like, the Wii U Virtual Console and stuff, and so, and maybe one day I'll revisit it, but Yoshi's Island was one of the later games in the system. It was, like, late 95, and, Super FX2 chip, just one of the most powerful games the system is going to be able to output. Beautiful, hand-drawn, like, crayon box, like, colors that they put together for this platformer, and it just stuck out to me so visually. And it was a tremendous platformer, and, you know, Miyamoto made it, and it's a great game, as you would expect. And just the visuals from it were so great, and it was so unique in that. So they put out a version of it for the Game Boy Advance, which is, you know, so it's a port, right? It's not the same code. And then for the virtual consoles, they used the Game Boy Advance. Until the SNES Classic came along, the game had never been reproduced in its original form on a Nintendo console because the chip is so hard to emulate. There's also some talk on, like, who has the rights to the chip and the technology, and they just never brought the Super Nintendo version back, but it's on the SNES Classic. Because, I mean, only a handful of games used the Super FX2 chip as it was, so it's pretty hard, you know. Star Fox 2 being another one, actually, which we may talk a little bit about that series in a little bit. But, so that was another one that I played through a bit. So having, you know, not as much experience with the Super Nintendo, but one visually that I wanted to make sure I included on here.
Okay. Yeah, and this is a game that I never owned. I have it now on the SNES Classic, but I don't have that knowledge of it. I've played it here and there, but I've never completed it. So I couldn't really add much to it other than, yes, it is fun. And I think the reason why is, like you said, it was one of the later, I think it was like a 95.
Yeah, it was late 95.
Release. Well, let's see if it's on the bestseller list. Let's bring that up real quick. Yeah, it's right there in number eight. So. Yeah. 1995.
I mean, Mario was a draw, and the Nintendo 64 didn't come out to the end of 96. So, and this was Yoshi's vehicle, right? Yoshi was introduced in Super Mario World, and really, they only taxed Super Mario World on the front of it, probably to, like, hello, parents, this is the game you're looking for. Really, it's own, you know, completely different kind of platformer with Baby Mario, who's crying is a pain in the ass, but it's really Yoshi's vehicle. It's his island, after all.
Interesting, yeah. So, like I said, that's a game I just really can't contribute much to because I barely ever played it.
I would be curious everyone's thoughts. You know, you play it on the SNES Classic and go back and see how it holds up today.
Yeah, but I'll have to fire that up tonight and give it a whirl. My thing with the SNES Classic is I kind of go to the games we've talked about already, though. You know? But my number one is available on the SNES Classic as well. And again, when we did our 16-bit rank and file, I gushed over this game, and I'll gush a little bit more. I'm going to a role-playing game, and it is called Earthbound, or Mother 2, I guess it would be called if you are listening from Japan. But Earthbound was one of the first games that I loved solely because I thought it was hilarious. I've always loved comedy, and to have comedy wrapped into a video game was something that I hadn't really seen yet or hadn't seen done well. It's not the only reason I like the game, but Earthbound is a role-playing game. You assume the role of Ness, who you might know from Super Smash Brothers games, and Lucas is also in there. And it's basically the story of a kid who meets a few friends along the way to save the world from an incoming alien invasion. And along the way, there's all kinds of wacky villains, weird cities and weird towns and weird situations, and it's basically a save the world role playing game. You know, you level up, you get better weapons, and it's just great. Have you played this? I can't remember talking to you about it. I have not.
But I played. Okay. When I wanted to get into it, this is one of the coolest things Nintendo did was they brought Mother 1. Was a Famicom game that was canceled for the Nintendo. And they brought it out for the Wii U Virtual Console, and I bought it right away. Because anytime they did anything special like that, where they obviously put resources in to bring something out that was completely unique and not available in the U.S., they would try to like reward it with like the $10 purchase or whatever. And so I played a little bit of that, and I've seen and read a lot about the game. You know, it had a huge marketing push at the time, but it fell flat. Nobody bought it. They didn't market it well. I think they had like, what was it, like boogers and all this other stuff. Like, I'm trying to remember, like, Nintendo was weird in the mid-90s trying to keep up with Sega. You go back and look at some of their ads. It's marketing, they got their butts kicked. And so they were trying to be loud, and Earthbound was not a loud game, but it was a great role-playing game, and Square made great games. And it just wasn't as big a hit initially in the U.S. as it was in Japan. But then it has also the biggest cult following of any game on the Super Nintendo, so much so that they did re-release it then, and it's on the SNES Classic, which, you know, no one would ever believe that 10 years ago that would happen.
Right. I do believe part of why maybe it wasn't a big hit is it's very childish looking. You know, to look at the game, and as I described it, it's a game about kids trying to save the world from an alien invasion. But it looks like, almost like, you remember the Little People dolls? The Little People toys? It almost looks like that. You know, like if they made a Little People's video
game. Well, and think about it, too. What do we think of role-playing? We think of Dungeons & Dragons or Might & Magic.
Right.
You know, or Final Fantasy III.
Final Fantasy, yeah.
So then you have, here's a role-playing game with just regular kids. And you're like, what? You know, it wasn't a fantasy in that sense. Now role-playing games are very much like that in different cases, but at the time you didn't think that it could be something that just normal kids, but it's a role-playing game. So
it's a game that I've played through several times. Like when I got the SNES Classic, it's the first game I played. I played through it. It took me, you know, about a week.
That's great. You really beat it again. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's really not the most difficult role-playing game. Like some RPG games, like before you fight the final boss, you better have your stats maxed out and things like that. It's the challenge isn't really super high in that sense in terms of battles, but it's more about the fun. You know, like the different towns are fun. The people like talk to the kids like they're idiots. They treat them like garbage, you know? Like, and even some of the things that you get afflicted with, you know, like in role-playing games, you get sicknesses and things like that. Like in this one, you get a mushroom on your head, and if it really starts to attack you, and this is actually pretty frustrating, it changes your directions, meaning if you're moving with a D-pad, down becomes up and left becomes right.
Wow,
and
that's cool.
You have to figure out what it is. And it's tricky, and you have to get to a hospital to heal yourself. And Ness can get lonely and homesick, and he'll stop fighting until he can call home and talk to his mom. You know,
it's realistic. Like,
it's just it's a really, really fun game that if you are a role-playing game fan and you've never played it, it specifically, like I said, because of the look, ignore that and give it a try. I think it's worth your while. If you like Final Fantasy III, which would probably be number 5 on my list, Final Fantasy III. Yeah. I liked both of them. I prefer Earthbound. For a few reasons. Number one, I think there's a lot of good Final Fantasy games. Number two, Earthbound doesn't have a 30-minute opera scene.
That's true. that you can't skip through.
Yeah. So there are some singing. There are some song and dance numbers in Earthbound that you can't skip through, but they're not nearly as long. But the other thing about Earthbound that kind of broke my heart when you were talking about it with me before was it came with a gigantic book when you had the game. And apparently, if you still have that book in the cart, that can catch a pretty penny.
Yeah, correct? Remember when you had found some of your Super Nintendo stuff and you messaged me and you're like, yeah, I'm just giving them to you know, my buddy where I found my old stuff. I'm like, you know, that Earthbound cart will fetch you $200 clean, you know, with the condition it was in. You were like, what? Yeah, I mean, it was so popular, rightly so. It was so popular in gaining. It was always one of those like great video game finds if you could find like an unsuspecting, you know, secondhand retailer that would have the game for like $5, but you knew it was a $100+ game. And then, yeah, so at the time, the game was expensive. It came in a big box that came with a strategy guide with it. And so having all that together will fetch you a couple hundred for sure. When I was heavier into the collecting, I never got this one. You know, a good looking cart was like, it was like over $100. And maybe even closer to two then, just because there was a demand for it. Even though the game wasn't particularly scarce, because they made a ton of them, just didn't sell really well. And then so obviously it was discounted out there, but it just wasn't popular. So, but there was such a demand for it that if you could find it, then you know people were really willing to pay a pretty penny for it.
Yeah. It's funny that it's a game that wasn't really successful, but because of its like cult legacy, like, the characters live on. Like, Ness and Lucas are staples of Super Smash Bros.
That is exactly why they're in there. Although, they were in the Nintendo 64 version, right? The original Smash Brothers. Was it Ness in that?
I think Ness was. I don't think Lucas was.
Ness was. And that kind of kept them alive. Yeah, they came out with there's a couple other things that they're pushing for. So, there was Mother 3 was just on the Game Boy Advance in Japan. They've never released a U.S. translated. Now, there's plenty of people that have spent hundreds of hours of their time and have, you know, translated it, and you can play it, you know, via ROM, emulator, whatever. And then there's also was the famous kind of Earthbound 64, which was canceled in the U.S. There are some screenshots out there of that, and it was canceled, unfortunately, for the Nintendo 64. So people think that's like the holy grail out there, is to find like the somewhat complete version of that game that was in production for some time. So
as we're talking, I'm browsing through eBay listings just to see there's a the cart of Earthbound is going for $85 right now, and it's got 13 bids. There's a one with the cart and the booklet but not the box, over $100, and there's still 5 days to go.
That really tells you right there that people are already in on it. And one of the things that I wondered if it would impact the price was what we talked about. So it came out on the virtual console for the Wii U first. That was a big deal. And then it made it to the SNES Classic, which is insane if you think about it. That, you know, Square is a tremendous company for the Super Nintendo, and we're going to talk about a couple honorable mentions that they did. And but so if people wanted to play it, there's easier ways to play it now, which would drive the price down, obviously. Not that you couldn't always emulate it, but people finding easier ways within their normal consoles and whatnot to play it, and then of course maybe the demand for a physical copy went down.
I think people want that book.
Oh yeah, the book too. Yeah, for sure. You know, for sure. And so, you know what, boy, it was discounted like nothing back in the 90s. If you could go back in time, you could pluck them for nothing.
Yep, and just make a nice, comfy side gig.
For sure.
Selling Earthbound books. So, Earthbound is not on the list of top-selling SNES games, by the way.
Let's segue real quick here to some honorable mentions and keep talking about Square. So you mentioned Final Fantasy III, which is a game I played a little bit of. I have it, actually. One of my favorite stories from game collecting, and again, I started game collecting back in like 94, was I worked at Hollywood Video one summer. It was the summer of 98 to 99. Yeah, no, summer of 98, must have been just straight 98. And they were transitioning their Super Nintendo rentals out. And so I have like complete inbox Super Mario RPG and Final Fantasy III. And the boxes, remember, they just put them away. Oh, wow. So the boxes are mint. The carts had a sticker that I removed and cleaned up the best I could. But they're two of like my like most valuable pieces in my collection. Prized possessions. Yeah, is those two games from because I bought them, I think, for like $10. They were going to put them out for that price. So, and I knew even back then, like, these games were tremendous. Like, I have to get a hold of them. And that was 1998, so.
Yeah, Final Fantasy, I'm not a big Final Fantasy guy. There's so many games in that franchise. Final Fantasy III is the one that I have had and played through and really, really loved. Just same as Earthbound, really. Like, I'm not really the biggest role-playing game guy. I'm not huge into that. I'll play them here and there. But these two are probably my one and two in terms of those games.
And where did Final Fantasy III end up on your list?
I'm sorry.
I meant on the selling list.
Oh, on the selling list. Yeah, it's actually listed as number 11. They have it listed, of course, as Final Fantasy VI.
It was in Japan. The true numbering, Final Fantasy fans will know, is actually 6. So 7 on the PlayStation is technically the next one in line, but they called it 3 here in the U.S.
Yeah, and we did mention that opera scene. For anyone who doesn't know what that is, there is a legit part of the game where you're in an opera and you have to do some battles up in the rafters and make sure the opera goes off without a hitch. And it's long, and it can be frustrating because if you fail, you have to do the whole thing again. And I think the whole thing is like 15 minutes long, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I'm sure you could probably find videos of it on YouTube.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Mario RPG, I was going to transition you to that too. Yep. That was an amazing crossover in my mind. I didn't play it at the time because you had Mario characters in a square role-playing game.
Yep, same with me. I didn't play it when I had it. It's a game that I downloaded on the Virtual Console. So I played it for the very first time, you know, in the last 10 years. And it really is a good game. Super Mario Brothers and The Legend of the Seven Stars. It's a really good game, but it didn't make my list just because it doesn't have that. It's weird that I don't consider it when I think of Super Nintendo because I played it on the Virtual Console.
Both those games, Final Fantasy III and Super Mario RPG, are again on the SNES Classic. So,
yep. Yeah, so they're loaded. Those aren't the only RPGs on there. I believe Secret of Mana is on there too.
Surprise one. That was nice that it made it in there.
Yep. There's a lot on there. So, one game that's not on there that was on my honorable mentions, I wasn't a fan of it, but I wanted to talk about it for a minute or two just because I think that it's lived on because creative people have gotten so much use out of it, is Mario Paint. Mario Paint is still, you can go on YouTube and find current popular like songs on the radio that people have used their Mario Paint to to do.
How that works? I had the mouse because you can use it with SimCity and stuff too.
Yeah, Mario Paint was the basic part of it was kind of like MS Paint. You could draw and do some things, but it had a musical part to it. Like a music generator where you could kind of have like your music sheet, like if you play the piano, and you could kind of make your different sounds and things like that. So people who still use it will find songs that they know and make Mario Paint versions of it, like in the sense that you would drop the notes where you want them and you'd play it out. And it's just wild that it's still being used for that reason. I never had it, and I wasn't good at it. Let me see if I can bring a game up here real quick. And we can just play a few seconds of it. Here's Toto by Africa on Mario Paint. Yeah. Can you hear this? And of course it's the 16-bit sound. And this is created on Mario Paint. You know? And as I pause it, like, okay. the next note is two Mario heads followed by two Boo ghosts. <That's fine. laughs> You know, it's maybe one of the most ambitious.
And that's what Nintendo's always been great for. We still see it nowadays, with what they're putting out for the Switch, and that's a great one to talk about.
I didn't have it, and I played it, and all I did basically was scribble.
Right.
You know, that's all I could do with it. I'm not that creative.
Now, there are so many games for this system that we really didn't have a chance to even touch on. I mean, I will say a lot of these start with Super, and that was just the way they did their naming back then, right? It was probably for parents, right, too, right? Oh, well, this is Super Bases Loaded, so it must be, because it's Super RBI Baseball. Those are actually legit games. and we'll run through maybe some of the honorable mentions. So we threw it out to our live chats group, who's been really engaged with what we've done so far.
Yeah, let me bring that up.
And I'll talk real quick. One that our buddy Aaron George brought up was Ken Griffey Baseball, which I think is one of the best sports games on the system. It didn't have the team license, but it did have the players, if I recall correctly. And I do remember playing that one. I would say it's an honorable mention on my list. I didn't play it as much as I would have liked, because again, I was like way into like the Hardball 94, like my rosters need to emulate the newspaper box scores every day. But but that was a great sports game, a great sports series that transferred on even to the Nintendo 64, a couple versions of it. Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, the games that got mentioned the most in our live chats were fighting games. We talked earlier as we talked about Street Fighter, and that was kind of the hottest period for fighting games, but some people mentioned Killer Instinct and Clay Fighters, which are games that, like, to explain Clay Fighters to someone now is like, so it's Claymation, yeah, Street Fighter, but it's like
it's
Snowman.
It's Street Fighter, you know? 2 parody, essentially. I mean, they call it,
yeah,
like,
yeah, but it was yeah, successful, you know? I guess that speaks to how successful something is, if the parody of the success is successful as well, you know. So, but Killer Instinct was another one of those. Obviously, we've talked about
Killer
Instinct
was. We talked about Donkey Kong Country before. So, Killer Instinct was made by Rare too, with the same 3D pre-rendered graphics for the Super Nintendo.
Yep, Killer Instinct was high on that all-time selling list. Let me find that again. Yeah. Oh, number 12. Yeah. In the history of Super Nintendo.
That was Nintendo exclusive, if I recall correctly. I'm positive on that. Yeah. So maybe with the shortcomings of Mortal Kombat 2 that we talked about, no blood, didn't run as well. You know, Killer Instinct was like a, pun intended, a killer app for the Super Nintendo when it came out then, especially when they're trying to make it loud and compete with the Genesis in the mid-90s, so...
Yeah, I thought Killer Instinct was okay, but I was a Mortal Kombat guy, so I felt like it was like just kind of copying it, you know. A couple other games, obviously, some people mentioned Donkey Kong, some of the games we already talked about. Super Mario World, we didn't even talk about, the top-selling game of the system by twice as many as anything else.
That cheats,
of course,
a little bit because it was a pack-in. But so essentially, with how many consoles sold, most of them were packed with it.
Right.
Even later on, they packed it with...
Kind of like Wii Sports.
Exactly,
you know,
exactly like that. Wii Sports is the most popular selling game because of that. And even later on, they packed it with Super Mario All-Stars, like a dual cart. You could get a cart that has both games on it.
Yep.
We didn't talk a lot about
Mario All-Stars.
About Mario All-Stars when we talked about the Nintendo games and how Mario All-Stars was actually not good from a porting standpoint, even with its upgrade. But that Mario All-Stars... is really technically one of the first compilations ever. You know, nowadays, like, we want things like the Sega Genesis Collection. Well, back then, on the 16-bit, you could get all the Nintendo games, including the real Mario 2. It was huge. You know, big deal.
Yep.
We didn't talk about Super Mario Kart, because I'm going to talk about it more in the next generation.
As well.
Did not
get to
play
that
on
later.
The 16-bit.
This is where it started.
It did get started here. And again, talked about Mode 7 graphics before, kind of that fake 3D. Where it looks like F-Zero was like that too, where the screen would tilt. It looked like it would be tilting, so it looked like you're driving into something. And Mario Kart made use of the same thing for that. I was never really a big fan of that, though, for the Super Nintendo. I think I even tried to play it a couple times since then. It didn't do much for me. But then the other Mode 7 game that was tremendous is another 1991 game, and that's Super Castlevania IV. Tremendous game. And like I just said, this was another one that came out like Christmas of the system's release. Unbelievable game. And the graphics were amazing and it used all the Mode 7 tricks they had. And that one actually is also on the SNES Classic, so I'd recommend people playing that.
What I love about Castlevania IV is, and I talked about Castlevania in our NES episode, it took a game that was really good and fixed the mistakes of it to make it better. You know, it's almost like, hey, here, we made Castlevania better, you know, and it was awesome, you know, because Castlevania is a great game, but there were some problems with it. Specifically, I think I talked about, you know, if you died at a boss, you'd have to go back not very far, and you couldn't restock your weapons or things like that, whereas Super Castlevania 4 obviously had a save option and things like that, and just a really great game. Yeah.
And they came out with another Castlevania game, Rondo of Blood, for the Super Nintendo, which is really, really hard to get. It was really late in the system's life. It was pretty popular, actually, on the TurboGrafx CD, especially in Japan. It's been re-released on PSP and some other systems. You can pretty much play it now, but it was kind of a second Castlevania game. And now I'm trying to kick in myself if it's not called that on the Super Nintendo. I remember it from what it was called.
There's one other series that I thought we should discuss. It hasn't ranked on either of our lists for either Nintendo yet. Even though I love Nintendo, played it the heck out of it growing up, it was always a blind spot. I was never really a Metroid guy.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about Metroid yet. How about you?
Yeah, I remember seeing Metroid and playing it at my cousin's house on the Nintendo. And I'm glad you brought it up. I had it on my list later on the Speak Dupe because a lot of people would have Super Metroid as their number one on the list. So it's kind of a glaring omission, but it really wasn't my thing either. And I never went back and played it as much as it was hyped. And it was like, oh, you can get it on every virtual console. It's on the SNES Classic. I've actually never really played it, to be honest. I've watched some playing of it, but I haven't played it myself.
Yeah, my brother and his friends really loved Metroid for the original NES. I don't want to say I didn't like it, but I just didn't get into it. You know, like, and I think maybe because my skills weren't up to their level, so I'd watch them play and kind of do stuff with ease, and then I'd try and I'd fail. So it just frustrated me. So I just kind of put it off the side and never really dove into it. You know, and to this day, I won't even use Samus when I'm playing Smash Brothers. That's not entirely true. I do sometimes.
That's a tremendous game, and one I'm sure that some people will be very fond of. And actually, just to quickly correct myself, it is Dracula X is what Rondo of Blood was named in the U.S. So Super Nintendo, Castlevania Dracula X was the...
Castlevania Dracula X. I'm just going to look at the box art and see if that's something that's familiar to me. Yeah, nope, don't remember this one at all.
It was released in July of 95.
Really... Okay. These graphics are really good for this system.
And I think, kind of that ongoing thing with, like remaking Zelda the way they did with Link in the past, this is the same thing with Super Castlevania 4. It's just the greatest 2D Castlevania one you can make. And they made another one later on, but Castlevania 4 kind of holds up, too. Before they went into their
I also never played Castlevania Rajon.
Oh, yeah, that's weird, right? He's he can't shoot. It's weird. It's a weird game.
You can pass things off really well, but
and I should say that it's not that Castlevania left being 2D, because as we'll talk about in future systems, I will wax significantly on some of their next offerings there. But Super Castlevania, I didn't play it at the time, so it doesn't make mine. One of the other franchises we haven't talked about is Kirby, and someone had brought that up for the Nintendo. It was a late NES release. I remember playing a little bit of it. But even on the Super Nintendo, they had great games. One of them made one of the Superstar. I think that's the one that has all the mini games on it. Yeah. So their return to Dreamland and all those games I played a lot of Kirby on the Wii actually, but I did not
me too.
Did not play it 16-bit wise. But those games are generally well received also.
Yeah, we may discuss Kirby when we get to the Wii. I'm not sure exactly where we're going to go with that one yet. To keep bringing it up, he is my go-to if I'm playing you at Smash Brothers. Kirby or possibly Donkey Kong. So.
Okay, cool.
But, you know, that's just a warning shot.
So let's see what other...
You know, in our chat, a couple others that were mentioned are games I'm not familiar with. Somebody mentioned Saturday Night Slam Masters, which obviously
I did not have. Too. So you're talking about the Street Fighter 2 engine. Essentially, it was one-on-one wrestling. Yeah, it was like you picked your wrestler and then you fought and did moves, but essentially it was like a fighter, just a wrestler. That's a good pick. Oh, that's okay, a pretty unique game that they never remade or made a sequel to my knowledge.
Oh, looking at pictures of it, it reminds me of a game that I thought we could talk about for a quick second. It's Final Fight. I really like the Final Fight series as well.
That was exclusive to the Super Nintendo.
It was Nintendo had Final Fight. Genesis had Streets of Rage.
That's kind of how you break it down. Yeah, Final Fight's a good one to put in. I like those brawlers.
They're fun. Probably won't make a top four. It has to be really, really good. But, you know, Final Fight was a lot of fun. Basically, the Mayor Hagar has his daughter kidnapped, of course, and he's the burliest mayor I've ever seen in my life. So, you know, sometimes you got to get things done by just pounding some people.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you know, there's one other that we wanted to bring up. It was Star Fox. So, obviously, one of the big things with the SNES Classic was the release of Star Fox 2, which was a game that was finished and then canceled, and so had not seen the light of day for 21 years, and then came out with the SNES Classics. That was a huge deal. And I will say that the original Star Fox is my most 90s game, because while all these games hold up, that game does not, right? So you remember those polygonal flight simulators you played on computers, and it was a little slower because the Super Nintendo tried its best. And I played it. It's fine. Star Fox 2, played a little bit of it. I actually had a reproduction card of one of the last builds that was available of it. It's a little bit different.
Okay.
I don't have an SNES Classic yet, so I probably will eventually get one to experience that on there. But yeah, I would say Star Fox is kind of that one kind of got left in 1993.
Yeah, that's I considered it being on my list, but it's a game that just did not age well. Whereas we talk about maybe Donkey Kong's like that. I disagree with that assessment, but I think that's fair when it comes to Star Fox.
And some of the other big ones on just running down the SNES Classic to talk, because it's our, you know, we talked about Contra 3 in the NES episode about sequels of that. I think it's a worthy one to be on there. Mega Man X was the and Mega Man.
Gosh,
man, was it 7? 6 and 7 came out on the Super Nintendo 2, and then Mega Man X came out, and they were challenging games. And I always like wanted to like be into that series and game, and it was not one that I played. But the first one they came out with X1, X2, and X was X3 on the Super Nintendo 2. I gotta look and see.
We'll find
out. I know there was a PlayStation one, but Mega Man X was another popular platforming series.
Yeah, Mega Man X3, late '95, that's an expensive game. near the tail end. Yeah, near the tail end of the SNES. Available on eBay for $879.95. Good God! Oh, jeez. But yeah, I mean, there's so much to talk about. I mean, we went with 4 games because that was the original hashtag. I think talking 10, going to a 2-hour podcast, but we could talk about 50 games and I wouldn't get bored with it, you know? So much. And so you guys who are listening and chiming in and stuff, we appreciate that as well. You know, Michael DeDamos is chatting while we're recording right now, and he's given some praise to the RPGs. Palladian's Quest, Breath of Fire, Secret of Gaia, Secret of Mana, Earthbound, Super Mario RPG. Like, the RPG lineup for Super Nintendo is really second to none. There's just so much good
games
in
there. More Square games that are iconic role-playing games, for sure.
Yeah. You can't go wrong.
So this was a great commercial for the SNES Classic and or your virtual console, which is not coming to Switch. I think if I had – I think that was about it for me for games that I really wanted to touch on. I will say, though, with Kirby was Kirby's Dream Course made the SNES Classic, and it's a that's actually a game I have played extensively from when I was doing – different sports retro game reviews, and I actually did take a look at that one, which is kind of a puzzler mini golf game with Kirby and his enemies. It's certainly unique.
You'll have to
try it. It takes some patience. I'm not sure we have that kind of patience in our older age now, but I can imagine in the mid-90s when you could sit down and play things for hours on end, that it was pretty fun.
Right.
So.
So if you're looking for some Super Nintendo games, I'm on Amazon.com right now, and the Super NES Classic is available for $99.50 if you have Prime. So you could get it tomorrow and spend the rest of your week playing it. But of course, if you're going to buy it through Amazon, Brad, tell us how we should do that.
That's a great segue. PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon. All you have to do is just type that in, and it will revert you using our link. And that's how you can help support the site and its content creators. Mm-hmm. And the people that work behind the scenes when it comes to editing podcasts and whatnot. That's how we thank our friends that are all doing this, you know, and giving their time, because we enjoy and love what we do. So, yeah, that would be great if you're still looking for that SNES Classic.
Yeah, and it'll help us raise the funds to buy the Earthbound book.
Yes. So. Jordan can finally have his strategy guide, which I'm sure you can find image somewhere online, but it's just not the real thing, guys, okay?
Well, the original strategy guide had scratch and sniff.
Yes, that's true.
I'm not scratching any.
That's true. So. That's true. All right, so let's talk about real quick where we're going to go next.
We'd
like to draw
you,
straws here. I did hint a little bit in the beginning, we were not going to do a TurboGrafx-16 show. My experience with that system growing up, I did have the one friend who had it amidst other systems. He had a Turbo Express, which was a handheld, which played the same games, similar to the Nomad that we talked about, but it was wild at the time and incredibly expensive. But Toys R Us, rest their soul, they had bought in on that, and you could find TurboGrafx-16 stuff there, and it was more popular in Japan, and it did pretty well there into the 90s. You can find some stories online about on that system and NEC and how they went through with Bonk and things like that. But I don't have a top five there. I will say that if you enjoy the system, if you enjoy shooters, shmups, you know, like that's an unbelievable system for it. And but we're gonna skip over that one. But if you have a top five for that, feel free to share it with us. Next we're going to move to the next generation, and I don't have a Saturn list. We can talk about some of the pitfalls there, but I do have a PlayStation list. It's going to be a pretty long show.
Yeah, we got PlayStation, we got N64.
Yeah, then we'll do N64. We'll go chronologically a little bit, but I think we're going to skip over. Saturn was first in the U.S., epic blunder.
But we are not done with Sega systems.
We are not.
Because we will be returning to the Dreamcast.
To the Dreamcast.
Down the road. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm comfortable with moving past the Sega Saturn. Never owned it. Don't know anyone who did. Same with Neo Geo, which I think, would that be a 16-bit system?
Yeah, technically it was 16. A lot of tricks. That's a hard one to unpack. I'd have to do a little research and share with everybody so I didn't speak to, but... Yeah, Neo Geo is technically be next in there. It was out as a home console. I always remember getting like the Funko Land flyers that you could get in the mail.
Yep.
They're black and white, and you go to like the Neo Geo section, and be like, Magician Lord, $250. Like, why is this system $800? And it was just wild,
right?
right. And yeah, so we're not gonna do a top five for that. Although I did own a Neo Geo at one time, but I sold it before my daughter was born. Every game I bought for that system in just a couple years I had it, I made like 50 to 100% on what I paid. So even into like the 2012s and 13s, the prices there were astronomical. So I made money on that one.
All right, that might be a nice little side business for me to get into.
Selling Neo Geos
on the side.
Yeah, it's that's a whole other rabbit hole we could go down one day. So no Neo Geo either. But
let's stick with Sony. Yeah,
that I did not have a friend that had that one.
Saturn was so expensive. No,
my buddy having like modded Saturn. They figured out how to mod that. There were a lot of mishaps with that system, and it was not one that that I had. And so PlayStation really wiped them up and down. So.
It may be hard to come up with even four games for the Saturn. For me.
Yeah, it would. I'd have to make some stuff up, to be honest, to get there. Yeah. I mean, I'll be truthfully, just real quick on them for listening. So, like, if you like 2D fighters, like Street Fighter that we talked about, like Alpha 2, X-Men, Children of the Atom, Marvel Super Heroes, those games were better on the Saturn. Did 2D better than the PlayStation did. So any 2D game,
sure,
you would want to get on the Saturn. But any 3D game, like the way sports games were moving at the time, right, anything like that was better on the PlayStation. So, I mean, Saturn had its positives, and it was 2D gaming. But other than that, that was it. So that would have been my list, would have been like,
yeah,
Street Fighter or X-Men versus Street Fighter from Japan.
Like Virtua Fighter.
Virtual Fighter, yeah, was like, yeah, Virtual Fighter 2. That would really be where my Saturn one is. Maybe we'll touch a little bit more on the Saturn when we go into PlayStation next time, though.
Sure.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
Well, it was great talking to you. And everybody, thanks again for your feedback. Continue to shoot us your lists, and we will catch you next time.
Emotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceforNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.